Four-man rush. Fields has time. Launches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State. A deep strike, and the Buckeyes stretch the lead again. 56 yards. Wow.
Because of the day when they say we are, we say we are the Buckeyes.
The handoff by Hoynes to George in a foot race, and he gets away. George is gone. Eddie George putting up more Heisman Trophy numbers.
Offensive line gives Troy plenty of time. Goes deep, Gens wide open. Wide open, folks. Touchdown. Here we go. Get out the adding machine. We're underway.
It doesn't stop being average. It begins to be elite when you can cross the line. Today is that kind of day.
Warden Schlager to the sideline, caught. First down.
Woo! What a hit. Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there? And you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
Don't let that team stand in the way. No way!
Hey, it's Jamie Sumner, left guard from 1994-95, and this is the Bunch of Nuts podcast with my boys Dan and Cass. Go Bucks!
Hello, and welcome back to the fourth season of the Bunch of Nuts podcast. I'm Dan. I'm here with Big Cass, and as always, we have a big guest to start the season. Cass, bring our man in. It's a pleasure to have him on, but Cass, I'll let you do the honors.
Well, we haven't had this particular position ever on the podcast, and, you know, getting goosebumps, and we have quarterback Greg Fry from late 80s, early 90s on the podcast. Get our first quarterback on the pod. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Happy to be on, guys. You know, it's almost mid-July, right? So we're not too far off from the start of the football season. So your timing's great. Thank you.
Yeah, 50 days, because obviously it's Tuesday now. When you're listening to this, fans, it'll be 50 days to kick off. Go on to Facebook. I've been doing a countdown with all the great players who wore jersey numbers and getting pumped for the season. And we're all pumped because it's going to be a 12-game season. I'm pretty confident. But first and foremost, we always ask our guests, what does it mean to be a Buckeye, and what did it mean to play in the Shoe, not only at any position, but the quarterback position?
Wow. I could say I answer that question with a lot of pride, you know, I didn't come to Ohio State understanding the history of Ohio State. I was a big Notre Dame fan out of Cincinnati, being a Catholic kid, you know, didn't really understand what Ohio State was about. But obviously when I got there, I learned pretty quickly about the traditions at Ohio State and, you know, having a lot of respect for those that came before me. Now that I've played, obviously, and I was a captain in 1990 and, you know, was a 3-year starter and, you know, contributor for 4 years. There's a lot of depth that I guess to that answer, that, you know, there's a fraternity of guys that I got to play with, that whether they were with me or before or after, that, you know, there's a tight knit group of fraternity there. And really just being grateful that I had the opportunity. And I think as each year passes, you know, I become more and more grateful of, wow, how special that was for me that I was able to go through that process and get to play in front of that many people and get to play in Ohio Stadium and be a part of that experience. You know, I could sit here and tell you story after story after story of the memories that flow back to not only on the field, but off the field, of the people that I've met, and the fact that, you know, the Ohio State Alumni Association is so huge and significant across the nation. You know, wherever I go, there's Buckeye fans, and that just, so that never really leaves me. So I'm constantly reminded. And I guess I'd wrap it up by saying that, you know, you leave a legacy, you know, a memory of how people look at you. And for me, it's about the comeback games that I was a part of. and that I get reminded of all the time. And, you know, I get a little choked up even thinking about that because, you know, I get to live those experiences, but I realize after the fact how much I affected other people, and they'll come up and say, man, I remember that game. I remember that game, you know, and that's just pretty special to be remembered in a positive way, because that was certainly one of my goals. I wanted people to, you know, remember who Greg Fry was, and that has happened, and I'm so, so grateful for that.
And that's, I mean, the comeback games, those, that's a great segue to, I guess, one of our main questions kind of started off. Just from when you look at both games, Greg, you were down 33-20, 4 minutes left against number 9 LSU, and then you were down 31-0 to beat Minnesota. Kind of take us through both, and I guess also you might not have a direct answer, but which one was tougher from your perspective to come back from?
Well, and I'm gonna add to that if I may.
Absolutely.
Because there's really two other ones that stand out to me, and it depends how much time you guys have here, but I'll answer your question. But there was the Iowa game my senior year at Iowa. We trailed by 12 with about 5 minutes to go.
That's tough.
That one stands out tremendously because they were undefeated at the time, ranked, I think, 5th in the country. They ended up playing in the Rose Bowl that year. It was arguably the best defense I ever faced in college. I think we had minus 38 yards rushing that day, if that helps you.
Buckeye team was minus 38 yards?
don't quote me on that, but it was close to it because they stuffed us. And threw a touchdown pass to Bobby Olive with 1 second left. So that one stands out to me. And then also, 1988 versus Michigan, we did not end up winning the game, but we were trailing 20-0 at halftime in Ohio Stadium. And we hung 31 points on Michigan in the second half and took the lead basically twice late in the game. And they kept coming back and finally beat us. You know, they just outscored us. We ran out of time. That's another one that stands out to me that people don't quite remember because we didn't win. But when you're trailing 20-0 against that team and you come back, that was pretty special to me. And I say that because the Ohio Stadium that day was shaking in the second half. I mean, we threw up points left and right and were nearly unstoppable in the second half. And I've seen that stadium shake before, but that's one of the times when I was playing that you could feel that. And that's a pretty special day. So back to answer your question, Dan, the LSU comeback for me was, as a young kid dreaming of playing college football, I dreamt of playing at Notre Dame, you know, and throwing winning touchdown passes. And the LSU game was when that happened. Like, that dream became a reality when I really least expected it. Like, you're in the game. It's happening. You know, you're losing. All of a sudden, you get this series of events, and like, boom, wow. So basically, I will say that that was a really tightly contested game. They had a fluke play on a tip pass that really should have been picked. And they went up two scores. And it was about 15 points or thereabouts. And people start filing out, right? So I just know for me, my mantra is, you know, I'm a no-quit guy. I mean, I'm not laying down, you know. And I learned in high school, I had some great high school coaches that really instilled that in me. My dad instilled that in me. So being down two scores, it's like, okay, well, let's get the first one back. You know, let's just get back in this thing. There's plenty of time. And there was maybe, I don't know, 4 minutes to go. So you just focus on, let's score that one. So you get that one, right? And we can cut the lead or cut the deficit. And then if I recall, our defense went out and stopped them. So now all of a sudden the tide starts shifting because they're on their own 20. They got a punt. You know, and the crowd's going nuts. And it's like, you know, we're really in this game because we just got to score one more here. And if you recall, they took a safety. Instead of punting, they took the safety. So that was two more points. So now it's like we're down 4 or 5, but we had to score a touchdown either way. And, you know, that part I remember vividly because Bobby Olive caught the punt, returned it maybe 20 yards or so, and the place is just going nuts. And I'm going to share a little side story there because
we love side stories.
This is going to be part of my book, you know, and I, you know, somebody's got to hold me accountable because I got to write a book because I got too many stories that people would not believe. Right. So this is John Cooper's first year. This is his second home game, and he's an excitable guy. Mm-hmm. And he, As Bobby Olive returns the punt, I go walking to my quarterback coach, And we're looking at each other like, so he's waiting to get the play down at the press box, right? Coach Cooper's not involved in the offense. At this point, he's a cheerleader. And he literally was acting like a cheerleader at that point in time. He and his son Johnny were jumping up and down. And I cannot make this up, right? He comes running up to us. He's like, go win the game! Go win the game! Go win the game! And they're jumping up and down. And I've never seen a coach do that in my life. Ever. Ever. Before or after. And I know my quarterback coach and I, his name was Bill, we both looked at him like, huh? We got a job to do here. That's what we're trying to do. We don't need to be jumping up and down right now. You can wait until after we score. And I didn't say that, obviously. But we were both like, okay, just give me the play.
Step aside.
And God bless John. I mean, I'll say this. For those of you that are listening, we butted heads when I was there because I wasn't his guy. I wasn't his recruit. I was an Earl Worst recruit. So me and a few of the coaches, we didn't see eye to eye because they didn't want us. And they made it very clear. It's not my opinion. They said that. So, but after the fact, we have mended fences. Mm. And it's pretty cool. Like there's a whole thing about forgiveness and it's really a great story. John's a great guy, great family guy. But at the time I was like, dude, what? So, I get to play, we go out and I throw a ball, a completion to Jeff Graham in tight coverage. We pick up 20. So like, we're moving right away. We're already in their territory. So we're like, we're in field goal range, but we need more clearly. So, a series of plays happens. And I remember I had Carlos Snow running a crossing route and I poor fundamentals, my feet weren't set and I threw it at his feet and he tripped. And it's one of those, like, if you've been in those situations, you don't get a lot of do-overs. Mm-hmm. If I make a throw there, it's a touchdown. Like he's gone. Like they're not going to catch him. And I missed it. And I was just like, oh, I knew it. Like you don't miss those throws. So then it becomes, and I might be missing a play to here, but basically there's 37 seconds left, give or take. And it's third and like eight. So Jim Coletto, our offensive coordinator, gave him a ton of credit because he called a right play. And he won the double post. And, it's just, I got to read the safety. And we caught him in the right defense. We caught him in a man situation where the free safety blitzed, I think, or was covered maybe a running back. So basically the free safety we were looking at disappeared, which for that play is perfect because you're throwing it right down the middle throat of the defense.
Why are they blitzing a free safety too there?
They didn't blitz him, but when they blitz, the free safety's got to come down and cover like a tight end or a running back. But they were bringing six or seven. So they were bringing heat, which again, a good defensive coordinator is not going to sit on his heels there. He's going to come after.
I respect it. You can't stand the prevent.
Right. And that's where as a quarterback, I was a little naive at the time. You're taught to expect that, right? But it was my third start and I'm just running to play, right? I'm just running to play. And I know like I got to read that guy. So he disappeared, which is perfect. And it made it for a pretty easy read. And I threw the post to Bobby Olive and, I let him a little bit more than normal because I was trying to throw it away from the defender, which I didn't really have to do. So I made it a tough play on him and he lays out, makes the catch, protects the ball, goes to the ground. The place goes nuts, right? And again, another little side story there. So my good friend, Scotty Powell, was a third string quarterback. He was the holder, right? So he comes out and we score all the time. And we always high five or whatever. And so I'm trying to run down to Bobby Olive and the place is going berserk, right? And I'm taking this in like, holy crap, this just happened, right? And he just bear hugs me and he won't let me run down there. I'm like, dude, like I'm trying to celebrate. He's like, I'm buying you a case of beer tonight. You're the man.
I love it.
Right? Just stuff you can't say now. Like he wouldn't say that in the post game, right?
Right. So,
what beer was it? What case did he get?
I don't remember, but we we celebrated. Let's put it that way. So
old PBR, probably.
Yeah, we were on the college budget. Come on, right? We're buying
PBR.
Joe Bell is like kind of case.
Yeah. Milwaukee's best.
Right. So I just remember everybody's piling up on Bobby Olive, and I literally just grabbed him. Like, I grabbed him by the shirt like a dog, right, and just drug him back to the sideline. Like, we're just celebrating. And the weirdest thing happens. So I get to the sideline. This is mayhem, right? It's just craziness. And I sit down on the bench and I start crying like a baby. Like I was, and I understand it now. I was so overwhelmed with emotion that it just came pouring out through tears. And people are like, dude, are you okay? Like what? And I'm like, yeah, like I'm, and it's just flood of emotion. Cause it was so, you know, it's something I dreamed of all my life. And you can't, you have no idea how you're going to react in that situation.
It was a joyous moment.
Right. And it just came out through tears. Right. And I just exploded with emotion because it was so intense. Like, you know, you just, it's, unless you've been there, it's hard for people to really understand what that's like. And again, that's where, you know, I get choked up thinking about it. Like, I'm so grateful that I was in that moment to have that experience. I mean, it's hard to explain what that feels like. So anyway, that was, you know, that was a dream come true moment for me. And, you know, it's on YouTube. Like I don't go watch it all the time, but people will send it to me. Or they'll be like, hey, I just saw it on, right? Cast, like it, people be like, it was just on the Big Ten Network or whatever. And, you know, and it's like, wow, that's so cool.
I'm a stickler of watching old games. Dan would probably be, it'd be like 11 o'clock at night and I'll send a link to Dan and be like, dude, you need to watch this game. And it could be a game from 1985 to last year. It's like, that's how I am as a Buckeye fan. And you know, it's weird. I may not be on the field, but I feel the emotions just because as diehard as a fan as I am, yeah, watching, you know, my team win like that. It's a real victory.
And it's just so, like, that's why we love having the former players on. Like, we had John Kaczorski on. We had, like, former players that, you know, weren't part of, like, the Tressel era, like, the glory days of the Tressel era. But I feel like these stories and experiences are so important for you guys to just share with the world because – you know, the younger generation, we listen to podcasts and we're all on YouTube and stuff now, but not everyone has watched, you know, Greg Fry lead the comeback against LSU or against Minnesota or Iowa or, you know, almost against Michigan. And it's just so important, I think, that people realize that, like, these athletes had such a, like, historic part of this culture that is now, you know, the Ryan Day Show. It's just so great to hear just all these stories and, like, what it means to be a Buckeye.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do have a fun question to talk about your career. Dan, this is your question. You got to ask it. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Do you think we'll ever see another Buckeye rock a visor as well as you did?
Oh, it's like it's normally I have it, like, sitting right here. Like, I could have grabbed it, right? I have it.
It's sick. I mean, I just those pictures of you, you look like you could play like today. The visor, it just makes you look so like modern. It's awesome. I love it.
Well, thank you. It's my kids get it out and they put it on, you know, it's kind of funny. But you know, it's again, I'll share the backstory. Okay. So I believe I was the first one in college to do that. I think Jim McMahon was in the pros and with the Bears that he did it.
Yeah.
You know, he just was crazy. I don't know what he was doing for, but for me, my quarterback coach was like, hey, you know, you're looking where you're throwing. So, you know, we want you to be able to look off the defense. We don't want the defense to see where you're looking. And I will tell you in retrospect, like now that I've coached quarterbacks for a long time and I've coached, it's like, well, I kind of got to look there because I got to make a read, you know, I mean, yeah. You know, I can go off this whole tangent because I coach quarterbacks, right? So it's like, there's so many young coaches like, well, you got to look them up. I'm like, no, you don't. No, not at the lower levels. And in a lot of cases, you don't have to. Now, when you get really, really savvy as a quarterback, yeah, you can look off to an extent and you use your eyes to guide the defense. That's fair. But at the same time, you still have to look where your read is. Like, I study the eyes more than anybody now. I promise you that. I've done a whole study on eye dominance. You should, if you guys are, anybody's watching this, Zach Smith and I did a podcast about eye dominance.
And it's very good, by the way. Very good.
Thank you. It's really like the tip of the iceberg about how the eyes dictate, you know, your body alignment and how you, your receivers are catching the ball, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess my point is it's kind of a joke. Like, he thought he was all cool. Like, well, you know, you got to wear this mask. It's going to make a huge difference. So I went with it basically. Like, I'm going to do what the coach can tell me to do. And at the end of the day, I liked it because I'm sensitive to light. Like, I wear sunglasses all the time, not because I'm light sensitive. So I was comfortable wearing this. That's really what it was for me. Like, it was cool.
It makes sense. I mean, I never thought of it that way with, like, the looking off the eyes. It's actually such a smart idea from your coach. I would have never put that – I just assumed it, you either, one, thought it looked cool, or it was just a light issue. My idea with visors, and this might be a million-dollar idea down the road, prescription visors for receivers with who need glasses.
That is –
Instead of the contacts, just get a prescription visor. Yeah, everything looks good, or whoever needs it.
I think that's there's
you might be on to something, man.
We're not going to give credit to that quarterback coach. I wasn't a fan, and the order I get, I'm not. I don't mince words with that. He's not getting credit for that. He wasn't smart enough. He didn't play the position. You know, no. I'm calling bullshit on that. So
yeah,
but I will tell you that it, you know. Yes, there's some value in that as far as they couldn't see my eyes, which is why they banned it. You know, they want defenders to be able to see where you're looking. So I wore it for about a year and a half. And then my senior year, I took it off because I'm like, screw that. I'm wearing the eye black. I want to go old school, because at that point I could feel like I could look off a little bit, and I learned how to use my eyes, because I was, you know, I played 4 years. I could do that. But it's if you know, going back to the Minnesota game, you talk about the comeback. So Lynn Swann was the color commentator for the Minnesota game for ABC Sports, right? And he kept making these comments in the first half, like, well, you know, because I stunk in the first half in that game. And Lynn Swann's like, well, I don't know if he's wild or why he's wearing that visor, because they're playing inside. Like, I don't know if he can't see or whatever the deal is. So, you know, but what's cool is I'll run into guys that I played against, you know, and they're like, man, that visor was cool. They like it, you know. Like, it just, you know, I know it was intimidating. Pops out. That was part of the factor.
It just looks so good, especially like in that Minnesota game on that like AstroTurf or whatever. It pops out. I don't know what it is about it. It just makes that like comeback so much better.
Well, thank you. It's you know, we had some fun with it, and I got used to it. It was and the fact that it's upstairs, like I got it. You know, it's so cool. Like I can, my kids think it's a cool thing.
You talk about training quarterbacks. Talk about your – it's been 20 years. I stalked you on Facebook. 20 years training quarterbacks. Talk about what it means to you to train these young quarterbacks, and who are some notable names that we may know or up-and-coming names that we should look out for?
You know, it's – Cass, it's just a passion for me. I just got done, you know. Training a quarterback. I haven't gotten tired of it. It's just, it's the weirdest thing. You know, when you really are passionate about something like that, it's time kind of, time stands still for me. Like it's just, the time is non-existent when I'm doing that, 'cause I love it so much. So, you know, my goal is to help quarterbacks develop fundamentally. And then certainly, you know, I talked about the eyes, you know, so I incorporate that into my training as far as how they track targets. And I do it in some very simple ways. But with my more advanced quarterbacks, we'll get more into film study. I've done more film study in the last couple of years, especially with high school and college quarterbacks during the season, because I don't believe they get enough film study. And I can offer them something that they're really not going to get, because the coaches they're with usually don't have the time. It's not that they don't have the experience. In high school, some don't have the experience that I have. But it's an add-on of value that, you know, when they really start to understand how to read a defense – I teach a lot of movements, you know, how to move in the pocket or out of the pocket based on what the defense is doing. That's a learned thing. That's not easy to do, because your instinct is to run away, you know? So when people, you know, you hear they got happy feet. Well, guess what, people? You go stand in the pocket one time and see what happens, where you're going to go. You stand. It's like having a car coming at you and you're supposed to stand in there. And people are like, oh, he's got happy feet. Well, okay. Maybe he does a little bit.
the quarterback who played after you always says happy feet. I'm not going to mention any names, right, but he's kind of a big deal.
I know who you're talking about, because we spent a lot of time together. But if said in the right context, you know, it does make sense. Inexperienced quarterbacks will tend to get out of the pocket sooner than they should. But my point with that is they have to be taught how to stay in there. Like there's an art to that. Like it takes time. It's not an easy deal because instinctively you don't want to stay in there because it's not comfortable. So, but to answer your question, you know, some of the name quarterbacks I've had, I'll start with one that you might not know necessarily, but his name was Jake Kasten. And Jake was a 5'9", 160, four-year starter at Bexley High School. And I coached him there. That's when I was coaching high school football. And Jake went on to set a ton of records at Bexley. And he was not a guy you looked at and be like, that's your quarterback? And he actually got a scholarship to Tufts University in Boston, which is a very, like, Ivy League type. Yeah. And the only reason he got in, his dad told me, because he had football plus decent grades. What's cool about Jake is that he ended up playing a year of college football and quitting, which for him to even play college football was a major win because nobody expected that, me included, nor his dad.
Right.
But Jake went on to go into politics. His dad's very prominent in the Republican Party in the state of Ohio, just as more of donate money, right? Encourager, if you will. But Jake landed with the Romney Ryan campaign.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And he ended up being, I'm not sure the right term, but Paul Ryan's like right hand guy, like logistics team guy, like front guy going ahead.
Like chief of staff or whatever. Something like that.
So, and what's cool is Jake got married 2 years ago and I went to the wedding and Paul Ryan was there. And what's really cool is I met Paul one time when the campaign came through Columbus, Ohio, right? So Jake invited me. And I got to meet Paul Ryan, and I had a conversation with him. I'm like, he's not going to remember that. You know, he was very gracious, and he asked about Jake and his high school career, and I told him at the time. And it turns out that Jake's high school career in football really helped him in the campaign because the campaign was quite intense. And because Jake could handle pressure situations in football and deal with me because I was not an easy guy to be coached by. I was a little intense my first couple of years coaching, but Jake thrived on that. And because of that, he handled the campaign really well and they loved him. And that's why he went right to the top of, like, he was the man. So I'm at this wedding and sure enough, Paul Ryan shows up and he ends up speaking. And he's like, you know, he says, it was about 8 years ago. I met Jake had just gotten started with me and I met his coach. And his coach was this guy named Greg Fry, who happened to play for the Buckeyes. Now, again, this wedding is in the state up north. I already said Michigan earlier, so it's the state up north, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, is Greg Fry here? And I'm like, yeah. Like, I can't believe you remember the conversation. Like, he goes, Greg told me about Jake and his character and how disciplined he was. He goes, that always stuck with me. And he goes, I know that experience really helped Jake. And he's like, Greg, if you're here, stand up. And I'm like, oh, my. Like, you remember this conversation? I'll never know. So that was pretty cool. And Jake has gone on. He's now in the financial world out west. But he had a great, great time and learned a ton with the campaign. And yeah, I'm proud of that because he didn't have success in the football field, but that translated into his career. Outside of that, the first one would come to mind would be Brady Quinn. Brady was at Dublin Kaufman, and really ironically, he and Jake were 4 years apart, but we did a lot of training together, which was pretty cool. And when Brady was a sophomore at Dublin Kaufman, he grew like 4 inches. Like, I was like, wow, like, I've never seen that. And his arm strength was just off the charts. Like, I just, you know, it's, you don't see that. And in all the years I coached, I never had anybody that good. I mean, he set a ton of records at Notre Dame. You know, he was an All-American, first-round draft pick with the Browns. I think he was maybe third or fourth in the Heisman voting. He was in the Heisman room. Like, I mean, that's like, you don't get a whole lot higher than that.
I think he finished second behind Troy Smith in 06. I want to believe that.
I could be wrong, but I think Linehart won it because that was the year that Notre Dame and USC went toe-to-toe at Notre Dame.
And I think in 06, he finished second behind Troy.
You're right. But the point is he had a tremendous college career.
Right. He's a fantastic man. I will tell you, I've done a lot of behind the scenes the past few years with Big Noon Kickoff and stuff. And
okay.
He's a phenomenal man. And I like funny story, I picked him and Liner's brain one day at the Porter John's of all places. We all stayed in line at Porter John's, and I was like, man, I'm never going to see two Heisman candidates or a Heisman quarterback together who it was rivals on the football field. So I had to pick their brains, and a great, he's a great guy and very respectable. And I'm not a big Notre Dame fan. I'm kind of a Notre Dame hater, I ain't going to lie. But I loved watching Brady Quinn play. He was one of my favorites.
I can tell you, when he committed to Notre Dame, we sat down, we watched some film. I said, ask him for film. I said, let the coaches know you mean business. Get the film. And that's when they had to, like, mail the film to him, right? So we're watching on VHS tapes. And I went to his house, and we're watching this film. And it was March. Like, he's still in his senior year at Kauffman. And I said, Brady, you can play this fall. Because they had this kid. It was an athlete, a quarterback. He wasn't a true quarterback. And they had no depth behind him. I'm like, I'm telling you, you can play this fall. I said, here's what you got to do. Now, you got some work to do. And you know what? He by game three, they put him in against Michigan. They were losing by 38-0, and he never came out. Like, that was it. And it was a rough year. I mean, he took his lumps, but he started as a freshman, and that's not normal at Notre Dame. And clearly had a tremendous career.
And I feel like, too, as you kind of previously mentioned before, you were always, like, a Notre Dame fan growing up. So I feel like that definitely had, like, you probably felt really good having a nice impact on that program. Even though you're a Buckeye, it probably felt – pretty good helping develop one of their, you know, totally. Best players. And
you know, yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of my when I'm coaching somebody, I'm a fan. Like, I, you know, I end up going to a couple of his games, and, you know, it's pretty cool when you can sit in stands and be like, man, I know what's going on here because I helped that. And that's, you know, I don't care what level, not clearly that's a one-tenth of 1% of kids I've coached that have made it to that level. And I get the same enjoyment out of an eighth grader that has a great game, or, you know, plenty of my, you know, most of my guys are high school guys when they're going out and having great games. But, you know, on top of that, I've coached, I think it's 4 or 5 state champions, you know, and there's no better feeling. I got it here. I'll show you a picture. Yeah. To have a kid that's a state champ. So this is Connor Dietz. So Connor was the quarterback for Hilliard Davidson. This would have been 2006, I believe, you know, and they won a state championship. And what's cool is I was doing the broadcast. So I think 4 times I'm on the broadcast crew as color commentator, and my guy's playing quarterback. So I got to be impartial, right?
Yeah.
And yet I'm emotional because I'm like, I want my kid to win. Every time I've done a broadcast and one of my quarterbacks has had a state final, they've won.
Every undefeated. Time. That's awesome. Times.
And this was my first one. And this was, I think this was back when we were with ONN. And, like, this was a big deal for me because on the broadcast crew, like, this is at Fawcett Stadium up in Canton. That's a legit stadium. We had the blimp that night. I mean, this game went double overtime. They won on a 2-point conversion in double overtime. You know, I get chills thinking about it. So, you know, this is pretty cool when I know that, you know, we've done a lot of work behind the scenes and it translates to, somebody winning a state championship. Connor got a scholarship to Air Force, had a tremendous career at Air Force, went through a lot of adversity. His senior year, his best game was in the Big House, you know, against that team up north. They didn't win, but he took them to the wire and played his ass off. And I was so proud of him. So, you know, stories like this is what lights my fire. And again, not everybody makes a state championship, but, you know, I get a huge kick out of knowing that we're putting the time in now. And then during the season is when it's going to pay off. And that's, you know, that's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, that's definitely awesome. I'm one of those lucky ones. I'm from New Jersey. So, I mean, our football isn't Ohio football, but my team who I played for, we actually won states twice during my sophomore and junior year. So and my sophomore year, it was nuts. We went down, we were leading the whole game. Their quarterback, who's actually Devin Fuller, Jordan Fuller's older brother. Wow. Best player I've ever seen play in person to Devin.
Really?
Fuller. Like he was unreal. I heard stories that Jordan was twice the quarterback he is. So
wow.
I go, and he's playing safety for Ohio State. So that just puts it all in perspective.
Yeah.
How crazy good these guys are. But, he threw a touchdown pass, 35 seconds left, take the lead. They kicked it off to us. Our like star player, Brian Dowling, fielded the punt. Well, the kick started running with it, gang tackled, and in a desperation play, he just like lateraled it.
Yeah.
And this guy, Troy, the other return, just grabbed it all the way, touchdown, 10 seconds left. And then,
what?
Yeah, that's how we won. It was, if you YouTube it, it's called the, it was literally called the Miracle in the Meadowlands. Really? It happened like a week before the DeSean Jackson punt return, like against the Giants. No so way. It's crazy. It's, I totally,
I'm writing this one down because I want to see this. My son will get a kick out of this.
It's Miracle in the Meadowlands. And actually, Miracle in the Meadowlands, Wayne Hills. You should be able to look up. And the only video is the coaches in the press box just saying, holy shit, holy shit. It's just, it's the funniest thing. It was crazy.
All right, I'm going to watch that one. I got it.
Yeah. It's great. Here's a question for you. It's kind of out there, but you did play for the Ohio Glory. Kind of like one of those, you know, those new startup leagues. My question is, do you think you could ever see like the XFL picking Columbus as a location?
That's a good question. I wouldn't rule it out. You know, again, at the time, the Ohio Glory was, you know, spring leagues have been challenging to stick. I can just tell you from the days that I played it, you know, we were backed by the NFL at that time, which was a really good thing. There was a foundation behind it. And there's a lot of good players. I mean, I had two or three guys on my team that ended up getting Super Bowl rings. George Koontz, I think, went and played for the Packers. And our kicker, Ruin, went and played for the Broncos, won a couple of Super Bowls. He won a couple of them with the Broncos in the late 90s. You know, there's a lot of good players out there. I mean, there's a lot of good players that need a little bit more development, just need a shot. And that league, you know, creates opportunities for guys like that. And for me, same thing. I mean, I was a very good college quarterback, but needed an opening and, you know, just need a little bit more development. And that league was beginning to open that door for me. So, you know, I hope that they keep coming back. And I think they will, because there's desire for that. People want to see football. So, you know, having been in that position, I root for it because I want to have the guys like me to have that opportunity so they can go play.
I mean, I personally think I think it would do really well in Columbus. I don't think the Columbus team would do bad. I think maybe the league might struggle, but I don't think Columbus would struggle as a market. And you have the new Crew Stadium downtown. If you could pack like 10, 15,000 people in there, it would get loud. They'd come watch the games. I guarantee it.
That'd be a great venue, but you think the Crew, do you think they're going to let them play football there? Like,
I think the
OOT football. I don't see that.
They did have the Herb Street Classic a couple years ago with, I think Alabama Hoover came up and played, I think Upper Arlington a few years back, at Moffray. My opinion, that I think they should make Moffray a high school playoff stadium.
I think so. That turf is amazing. Like, that is a great venue. I totally agree with it. I don't know why there's not more games there, but that's beyond me. I have other things to worry about than that.
So let's switch gears. Let's talk about the last year's Buckeyes first before we go into this year's. I want a hypothetical question. Throw COVID out. I know it was stupid last year what happened, but throw COVID completely out. And Ohio State had a 12-game schedule, still went on to win the Big Ten Championship beat Clemson in the Sugar Bowl. Do you think it would have been a better competitive game knowing that they had all 75 players dressed and a full season than getting beat 52-24 against Alabama?
I'm not so sure, because Alabama was that good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Alabama was better. But I do agree. I felt like we were just playing catch-up. Like, we just – I will say that I'm kind of butchering this. You think that I've done enough broadcasting, I give you a decent answer, but it's – you have to understand my brain's a little cooked today because I did a football camp this morning. I had training this afternoon.
It's so Tuesday. It's early. Yeah, it's early in the week.
I just felt like they were two or three games away to maxing out what they were really capable of doing. And when you had so much uncertainty in the lineup with guys out every week and you kind of had to fill the gaps, that is torturous on coaches, let alone the team chemistry. So the fact that they did what they did against Clemson was so awesome. I mean, we all experienced that, how great that felt. But, I mean, I can't tell you how great of an accomplishment was by that team and those coaches to hold that team together with all that instability, uncertainty. I mean, incredible what they accomplished. But, you know, even at their best, they're not beating Alabama. I'm going to say 9 out of 10 times they're not going to beat Alabama. Yeah, I'm right. Alabama was just they were
a buzzsaw. They were.
I mean, that's just, you know, sometimes you just got to tip your hat and take away your fandom and your bias and say, okay, that team's really good.
I mean, even they asked Najee Harris about the linebackers, and he's like, "Are you kidding me?" He's like, "I'm as sore as I have ever been. I've never been hit that hard." When he was talking about Pete Warner and all them guys, he's like, they did their thing. It's just, I mean, losing, especially on defense, we lost Togi. We didn't have Tyreek Smith. It was rough watching that game.
I think if we had those extra games and everyone played, it would be a lot closer. It would have been a better game. But honestly, I think we still probably lose. It probably would have been a painful loss if they all played. It would probably been like, oh, man, we could have beat them. Like, it was only a couple scores as opposed to just getting absolutely, you know, shell-shocked.
Yeah. I'm going to say 2-3 scores, you know, and we can, you know, we can debate that one all we want.
The second Tough Borland came out for the coin toss, and then they had their center that wasn't even playing. And you just saw the size difference of, like, their offensive line compared to our linebackers. I'm like, oh, my God.
They're going to blow
our guys off the line. There's no shot. And that's not even a knock on Tough Boyle and Pete Warner. It's just they're grown different down south.
I still think they should do the same approach this year and put the score up in the locker room. Like, because that was just – that motivation to beat Clemson was unbelievable. Yeah. But let's switch gears. It's – 20 of 20 is over. Thank God.
Yes.
2021,
Let me say this. I watched the Clemson game. I had COVID back in early January, and I'm like, I'm on the couch over there, like feeling like, ugh, like, you know, death. I was fine, but it didn't feel great. It was like a bad flu. Watching that game, you know, but that game energized me. I felt like dirt. And that brought me off the couch. Like, I've never screamed at a TV more than I did that night.
And my wife had COVID during that, and I didn't have any symptoms, but it was like the worst 2 weeks of my life because I was home, and I'm not a person that likes to be home all the time.
Yeah.
But that game energized both of us. Cause that game was the final day of our quarantine, and it was just,
I was out of body experience. Like, who is this person? Like, I was screaming at Devo. Like, you know, I'm like, I mean, I became a rabid fan, and I'm not normally that intense, but that night I was like, "You're going down, Devo." It felt good.
I was screaming once Skowski hit Fields. I was ready to fight someone. I was screaming, and my family was looking at me like, just chill out. They're reviewing the call.
He's gone. It's just be okay. But, all right, I got it out. Of my system.
So 2021, 2021 spring game was like, I mean, you can't really judge anything from the spring game. We know this freshman class is going to be what it is, but I was breaking down the other day this season. From what last year, who we've got coming back, we'll start on offense. And I was like, man, honestly, I was like, with all the people that were out for COVID, we had a lot of backup linemen coming in. Honestly, the only person we are losing is Justin Fields. And I was like, this could be a better offense than last year, but we don't have Justin Fields. So the three quarterbacks, because I'm not worried about the rest of the groups. It's the quarterback, obviously. What's your feel?
Well, I knew you guys were going to ask me this because it's always the one people want to ask. Here's what I'm going to say, and you may not like my answer,
Oh no, I want to hear honest to God, your truth. Truth of what you want, like truth, because like this is what we want to hear. We don't need to be fed, like, I don't need to be reading the 11 Warriors articles, like, hyping everyone up. Just tell us what you think, like, hold nothing back. It's, I want to hear it.
Well, and that's why you're not going to like it, because I don't know as much as anybody else. And I think this is what people need to hear, because it'd be really easy for me to say, well, I like this guy, or I like that guy. Well, you know what? And this is very important for people to understand. It's great as fans that we can make our guesses and this and that. But I want people to understand this is we don't know. Unless you're at practice every day and you're in the quarterback room, those guys know. Promise you, they know, because they know what each guy knows. They know how each guy can read a defense. They know each other's arms. They know. I don't go to practice enough to really, really know. And if I went once a week, I'd know a little bit. But, you know, I'm not sure. So I think the pecking order as it is what the coaches see. But I'm going to tell you right now, Ryan Day is not 100% sure. And neither is anybody else offensively, because they have to see what these quarterbacks have done over the summer, because we saw what we saw in the spring game. You know, I think the pecking order is what it is, and it's fine. But, you know, they got three guys that they can all play that have had great success. You know, and what I don't know is the ones that – well, the reality is none of them have thrown a pass yet in college.
No.
And the difference is some guys are very good – game day players. They're good in practice, but you get them on the field, they go to a different level.
Yeah.
We got to find that guy. And I don't know who that guy is yet.
I feel like for some reason, it's like McCord. Just from what I saw in the spring game, like getting out there, first pass, just an absolute cannon. And he's a true freshman. I feel like for some reason, he just knows how to turn it on.
I like what I saw to him, yeah, right? I
mean, For a guy that just came in out of nowhere, he's not that bad. I like him. I've heard, you know, other people have been around practice. They've told me they've compared CJ Stroud to like Deshaun Watson 2.0. Someone said that was like the highest praise I've ever heard. And then Miller's good. I mean, he might be a gamer. I'm not really sure what Miller has. I mean, he kind of reminds me of like a Joe Burrow a little bit, but didn't have a great spring game, but it's, you are absolutely right. No one knows.
I think all we know is I think all three guys are going to be pretty good. I mean, I think there's a little bit to like about Jack Miller. There's a like to about McCord. There's like to about Stroud. I mean, but thank God he's got the wide receiver room that he has.
Well,
that'd be rough.
Here's the thing is, you know, Dan, you made a good point. The fact that, you know, they got a lot of guys coming back and whoever the quarterback is, I mean, they're going to fight for that job, because to me, whoever gets that job, if they just do their job, give it a B-plus effort, doesn't have to be an A effort, they're going to light it up, because they got a stable running backs. They got some great receivers, tight. I mean, there's plenty of talent there. They just have to be a distributor of the football in this offense and function quite well. So there ought to be a battle come August, because it's worth it, because whoever's playing that position is going to light it up. And they don't have to be overly special. They just have to play within the offense, and because the surrounding cast is pretty darn good.
And, I mean, for Olave to sit there and forego his senior – I mean, to come back for his senior year, he knows something. I mean, he's at practice every day. And my opinion – and R.J. Young came out with his best Big Ten team, and I haven't seen, and this is just my humble opinion, all around wide receiver, I believe that Chris Olave is the best all around receiver that I've seen. It just because of what he does. I love Chris Olave.
The receiving room is just it's so filthy. Like,
right? Agree, Pat. Cass, I agree on Olave, but Dan, you're right. Like, the receiver was a joke. I mean, what's the word?
Are like six guys, like Marvin Harrison Jr.
It's gluttony. Like, there's just, they're everywhere. I mean, they're all, I mean, so that's my point. Like, I would kill to play with a receiving core like that. I mean, Jesus, they're going to light it up.
If we put 1990 Greg Fry in Ryan Day's offense right now in this, how many yards, how many touchdowns you throwing for?
Well, it'd be interesting to see me run the zone read. You know, yeah. I could probably get six or seven on a good play, but I'm not going to be busting it. You know, I can tell you that.
You were a good athlete, though. Yeah, I think.
I'm not going to disagree with that.
You were a very good athlete.
I was quick. I was very quick. I had exceptional quickness, but I wasn't going to outrun anybody.
By the way, real quick, yeah. Did you punt?
No.
Okay, they messed that up on Sports Reference because I was like looking at your stats and I'm like, there's no way he punted his junior season.
Tom Tupa punted.
Yeah, it says you punted like 50 times. You averaged 39 yards per punt. I'm like, wow, he was really good.
You got the wrong dude there. No, I did not punt. But I guess to your point is, yeah, I could play in that offense quite well and be very efficient being a distributed football because I was very accurate. I read defense. You know, the reasons that I played because I read defense as well. I got the ball out of my hands quicker than anybody else. You know, I would call it above average arm. You know, the ball got where it needed to go, and that was pretty fun. And so, yeah, I think I could. You know, I'm not as fast as some of those guys are, and I, you know, when I played, I wasn't the most special guy from an arm standpoint or a size or athletic ability. But you know, you put it all together, the finished product worked.
So you're saying 2021 Heisman campaign for Greg Fry?
I will say this.
Because it's a quarterback's award. I mean,
I will say this. I still compete with my quarterbacks. And I've got a slew of high school guys, and I've got a couple college guys. And we go toe-to-toe. And I have tendonitis in my elbow to back it up. Like, I throw more than I should. Like, I was talking to my friend Tim Williams, who was a kicker back then, kicker punter. Tim works with kickers now. He's like, why are you throwing? He goes, I don't kick. I said, because I like it and I compete. So I know I can still make all the throws because I've done it this year.
One
of my quarterbacks is Mark Wade, who's going to be the guy at Youngstown State. And we have spent a lot of time together in the last couple months. And they have a unique schedule this year. They played six games in the spring and they're getting ready to play their fall schedule, which is unheard of. And we go toe-to-toe. Like we play games of pig. You know, to the receivers, and he's not nice. Like he tries to make me, and I'm like, don't kill me. Don't, you know, there are no rules then. He's trying to bury me. Right. And I'm like, okay, bring it on. Let's go. So anyway, I can make all the throws still, which is crazy. And I do that because part of the training quarterbacks keeps me young and I love it. So as long as my arm's going to hold up, I'm going to throw.
That's funny too, just like how like the competitor inside never leaves you. Like I remember this time last year we were interviewing John Kaczerski and he was telling us when he coaches his like son's like youth football team that he'll actually bring like his pads to practice and like make the kids like tackle him. He'll like run the ball and like try to get him to tackle him. And it's funny that like former OSU players, like they're still in them. I love that.
It's like, because, and we've been good friends, you know, ever since we had Jamie Sumner on. Like, I talked to him, you know, very regularly, and, you know, obviously he played on the same side as Orlando Pace and late, and, you know, when Eddie won his Heisman and stuff, and I like to pick his brain because I was an offensive lineman. I did all the dirty work, and so growing with, you know, friendship with him, I'll have to ask him if he, because he's got kids that play ball, and I have to ask him if he ever brings his pads out to practice with his kids.
I will tell you that when I coached, I spent 3 years at Bexley High School and then two at Pickerington North. The last couple of years I coached in high school, and this is 15 years ago, I had a short stint as an offense coordinator, quarterback coach. One day a week, I would play scout team quarterback against our starting defense. And I brought out my red shoes.
Oh, man.
And it was on. Like, these guys wanted to take me down. They were coming after me. And what's really cool is, you know, it was fun. And I was careful not to steal reps from, you know, another kid that was doing that. But, you know, it was the right thing. And it was a blast for me.
It adds life to the practice.
And guess what these guys remember? So when I see these guys now, that's what they remember. That's the first thing they talk about is the, like, Tuesday or Wednesday practice when you wore the red shoes. Like, they just thought that was the coolest thing.
Let's talk about Pickerington North a little bit here. We just got JTT. Let's, you know, we talk about defensively for this 2021 team. JTT and Jack Sawyer. I mean, the two defensive ends. Obviously, you're not going to see everything that you're going to see out of those two boys this year. But obviously, we are now three deep on our defensive line when it comes to D ends. And what's your take? because we already know what Tyler Friday, Antoine Daxson, and all those guys who are there and are veterans. How are these two young men going to incorporate this defense, especially with Larry Johnson?
Well, I'll speak to Jack Sawyer because I've watched him play quite a bit. And, you know, I was part of a broadcast crew. I believe it's probably 2 years ago now. Opening game against at Olentangy Liberty, you know, late August. And Jack goes for 4 sacks in the first half. Right? Never witnessed this before. I'm like, it's halftime. He's got 4. Just absolute domination. And, you know, first game of the year, right? Like right out of the gate. And you know, I'm careful with hype. Like I had heard about him. I had seen him play once or twice prior to that. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be cautious here. I'm not gonna anoint him. But you go for 4 sacks in a halftime. Okay, I've done a lot of broadcasts. I've watched a lot of high school football. I've never witnessed that.
He did it in spring game too. Yeah, 5. He had 5.
Oh, yeah, I think and 5. That, so tell you, right? The guy's still a stud. So. He's gonna be pretty good, but again, it's until he does it on a consistent basis and you know and stays healthy. You know, there's a lot of, but it's clearly up to this point, the guy is really good. He's a great one. So and you plug that in with Larry Johnson, that's a pretty good recipe. We know where that recipe leads to, right? So, and then collectively you throw those two guys together. You know, again on paper that looks really good, and that D line's gonna be great, no doubt.
Do you think Sawyer was a selling point for JTT when he came to Columbus, besides the Hawaiian shirts at the airport?
It's hard to say. I mean, again, to me, if you're a DN, D lineman, and you've seen what Larry Johnson has produced, and you're coming to Ohio State, that's hard to say no to. That's really hard to say no to because he keeps pumping them out. And that's where I've been to practice. I've watched what he's done. You know, I've watched the drills. I mean, I remember watching Chase Young 2 years ago in August practice and just watching how Larry Johnson coached them and watching the hands, how disciplined they are with their hands as well as their feet. You know, it is impressive. You know, so you see that work going in and Larry Johnson's intensity and he knows how to do it. He knows how to breed these guys. So all I can say is it's going to be really fun to watch.
What about the back 7? Because I know the back 7 really struck me. I mean, besides we're losing all of our linebackers, but obviously the secondary really, really struggled. But the back 7 to you, what's going to look like? Obviously, it's going to be a lot different.
I'm going to plead the 5th on that one because that's not an area where I've spent a lot of time researching it. You know, I'd say clearly there's room for improvement there. But I think that the thing I'll say is you got a lot of guys that got to play last year that are coming back. You know, and some new blood coming in. So I'm not too concerned. I like having Kerry Combs back. I think that's a really, really good thing. You know, and it's been some time now, obviously, but I think, again, it means something. That Kerry Combs is a guy that I saw start his coaching career in Cincinnati. He was an assistant coach at Locata High School with a good friend of mine, John Sabatello, who was the head coach. And then Kerry went on to Coleraine. And I was able to broadcast a lot of games. I've known Kerry for a long time. He is a tremendous coach. And you know, now that he's had a couple years in the NFL to come back, I think that's, again, such a – you talk about an attractive thing from a recruiting standpoint for kids to know that. I mean, his success pumping guys out to you know, their first-round draft picks is uncharted.
I mean, doing confetti angels in the Sugar Bowl with his players. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he's an intense dude. That's never changed with him. You know, again, I can't sit here and say I've studied that enough to really give you guys a legitimate answer on that other than, you know, there's going to be some reloading and a whole lot of experience coming back. And collectively, I think, you know, you're going to see a great product on the field of that defense again.
Absolutely. Greg, as we kind of wrap up here, I guess 1.5 fan questions for you. Some of our listeners wanted to ask you some questions. Justin asks, What is his favorite moment on the field of being a Buckeye and off the field moment? Also go Bucks. I think you kind of touched on this, but if you just want to briefly answer that for Justin.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. You know, to me, it's the comebacks are big for me. And the Minnesota game is one that everybody remembers. And, you know, coming back from 31 points is significant. And when you were asked that before, I have, this is, if you can see that out of the light.
Oh, I see it. Wow.
This is our game day. What they would give us to us, like the agenda. Okay.
Wow.
So inside it has a rooming list. It has our agenda for Friday, Saturday. So my roommate was, see if you can read that name. See that? About halfway down.
Hold on. Herb Street, Kirk.
Right. And then it's got our agenda. So our room assignments. And then on the back is the agenda for, you know, set Friday, Saturday. So it's just, I found this like in the last year or so, cleaning out some stuff and found that.
That is somebody awesome.
Else, somebody gave me a ticket that was at that game today. So I have a ticket laminated, which is, those are special memories for me. But the real memory is obviously being there and having experienced that. And the fact that, you know, it's still the greatest comeback in Ohio State football history. It probably will be, because I don't think anybody's going to be down 31 points anytime soon. Yeah. Like we were. And it's the second greatest comeback in college football history. And I'm really proud of that, because it's, you know, not too many teams are going to come back for more than that, because you just don't have enough time in a 60-minute game. You can't dig that much of a hole and get out of it.
Yeah.
So the fact that we really pulled it off, and like literally I watched that quite a bit. And when I go back and watch it, every time I watch it, I'm thinking like, if one little thing goes wrong, we don't win. You know, 3-for-3 on 2-point conversions. That doesn't happen very often. And again, we could just do a whole other podcast on that one. You know, it's incredible. The things that fell in place, we scored twice on fourth down. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a special day when first half, everything went wrong. Second half, everything went right. And again, to be part of that it's such an honor. You know, people remember me because of that. And that's such a, you know, I wanted to have a legacy, and, you know, I'm 53 now. And the fact that people still remind me of that literally every week is such a cool thing. And I'm grateful for that.
And what was the off-field moment?
I know you asked me that one. Off-field. I would say, well, how about this? And Justin may not know this, that I played 2 years of baseball. So this one's off the football field.
Okay.
But this is my senior year when I was done with football. I played baseball my last 2 years at Ohio State. And my senior year in 1991, spring of 1991, we were Big Ten champs. And we were Big Ten tournament champs. And we were a game and a half away from the College World Series. We still hold the record for most wins in a season for Ohio State baseball. I think it was 52. Still the record. My goal was to play two sports at Ohio State. I wanted to play baseball. And not only play, I wanted to be a contributor. So, you know, this was I was a senior. I got to be a leader on that team. I was very much a contributor on that team. I hit, ironically, against Minnesota in the semifinal. In the final, I got off in the semifinal. I went 3-for-5 with 2 home runs and 6 RBIs. So
he's just a gopher killer.
Yeah, something about Minnesota just lit me up. Like, I can't explain it. But to Justin's question, like, that was a moment for me that was so, it was so different. Baseball is so different than football, less intense. But the camaraderie here with the baseball guys was incredible. They welcomed me. They didn't have to. The coaches welcomed me. And to be, my goal was to be, I wanted to be a contributing member of a Big Ten championship team. As a freshman in football, I was a part of a Big Ten championship team, but I was a scout team guy. Mm-hmm. So by the time I left there, I wanted to be a contributing member, and baseball gave that to me. And that is a memory that I would really cherish, because it was so important to me to end my Ohio State career with a Big Ten championship.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. And then we're also going to have another, hopefully, a 2-sport athlete now with JTT. He's apparently going to play basketball. Well, he's going to try to walk on. We'll see how that goes, but it can be done, and you are proof of it. So that
I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
I don't recommend it. But, you know, again, I'm proud of that, because that was my goal. And I had a lot of naysayers that were like, you're nuts, you know, and even the football coaches didn't handle it. They didn't like it. I'll just say that. They didn't like that. But I'm proud of it, and that I did that. And, you know, that's part of my legacy. I had 6 varsity letters, and I don't know how many is the most, but I don't think anybody got 7. I really don't.
Yeah. I feel like that has to be Well, Demario McCall might get six varsity football letters. That's the way he's sticking around.
Still get 4 years of eligibility, so you can only have four. You can play all you want, but you get 4 years of eligibility.
Absolutely. This isn't a question, but Harrison, he says, no question for Greg, but hearty congrats on the greatest comeback versus Minnesota in 1989. I was there. So someone who listens to our show was actually at that so game cool. And just – he remembers it. He just wanted to wish you congratulations on it.
Thank you for remembering. That's, you know, it's to be in that stadium, to hear the sounds of, you know, the Minnesota fans booing at the end. It's just, you know, you don't hear that every day. That's for sure.
Absolutely not. Man, real quick, your opinion on the NIL stuff. And how you feel about it.
Can you repeat that? I didn't hear you, Josh.
The NIL stuff, the name, image, likeness, how you feel, just real quick.
I got you. I at the end of the day, from a player standpoint, I think it's worthwhile. I think it's a good thing. It's overdue. It's complex as far as how to handle that because of the disparity, you know, between the schools. You know, then you have a disparity between, you know, there's certain players that are going to have their likeness, their jersey numbers are going to be sold more than the other ones. You know, I guess at the end of the day, we live in a capitalistic society. So why should that be a problem? Right. It's different. The certainty is going to change because we've gone from student athletes not being paid. Now we're going to be able to pay them. And it's just got to be a mindset shift of how to figure that out. But, you know, I believe in it because I'm a, you know, I own multiple businesses. I do multiple things. I believe in that. And, you know, it's great that when you can be there and be on scholarship, and that's awesome, but you really don't have much of an opportunity to earn income. You just don't.
Right.
Because you're really working full time as an athlete. So it's about time that barrier's been taken down. It's not going to be an easy road, I will say that, but I think it's a great thing.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Greg, thank you so much for coming on and spending, you know, hour and a half of your night with us, and thank you for listening to all our you know, dumb, crazy questions we had for you. But it was awesome having you on. Cass, anything else before we wrap it up?
It's a great intro and interview to have for season four. We finally got our quarterback. Dan, I mean, we've asked a couple. I ain't gonna lie, I peek around all the time, and it's just something what we like to do during the off season, right before kickoff, is to get us pumped up for the season. And we're so happy that you came on, and it was a pleasure, man. The stories were awesome.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Cass and Dan, you know, you guys are doing a great job. And as a broadcaster, you know, I'm encouraging you guys, you know, keep doing what you're doing. This is pretty cool stuff. You know, this can open a lot of doors for you guys. So I'm happy to help.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Greg. Greg Fry, Ohio State quarterback, college football comeback king. It was a pleasure.